and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
We're taking a step forward to invest in people.
Mayor Johnson's plan to borrow $830 million to fund infrastructure projects is under fire. Chicago's CFO joins us to discuss the plan. Our Spotlight Politics team on plans to rid the Chicago Police Department of officers with extremist ties.
The unique thing about Chicago is that it has always had a great variety of music.
And remembering legendary soul singer Jerry Iceman Butler. And now to some of today's top stories. A close call at Midway Airport today when a Southwest jet barely missed a private jet that entered the runway without authorization. The airline says the crew of Southwest Flight 2504 performed a go-around to prevent potential impact just before 9 this morning. You can see video here from Streamtime Live shows the plane touching down, then immediately climbing back up into the air a second later, just as that smaller Bombardier Challenger 350 enters its path. The Federal Aviation Administration is investigating. A suburban Chicago mother told jurors how she hid in her locked bathroom and called 911 after her landlord brutally attacked her and her son. She said that in the murder trial for her 73-year-old landlord. Joseph Zuba is charged with several crimes, including hate crimes, for the stabbing death of 6-year-old Wadi Al-Fayoumi. Hundreds attended his janaza, or funeral service, seen here. Prosecutors say the man became increasingly paranoid in the days after the war that erupted between Israel and Hamas in early October 2023 and targeted the boy and his mother because of their Islamic faith. The child was stabbed 26 times. His mother, Hanan Shaheen, was also wounded and spent weeks recovering. Juba's attorney has declined to comment until the end of trial, which is expected to last about a week. South suburban Dalton voters are casting primary ballots today, including embroiled Mayor Tiffany Hinyard, who argues she wasn't given the chance to do her job early on.
I think that I was blindsided from the go. I came in 2021. And when I came in 2021, I was faced with a recall. So every year, it was something else. Then they took me off the bank account. And then the next year, it was something else. So you never gave me an opportunity to continue to govern, and I want the opportunity to govern my town. I think the time is now.
When asked what she would have done differently, Hinyard says she would have, quote, told on the trustees sooner. The mayor is looking to keep her seat after an investigation last month accused her of consistent mismanagement of village finances and systematic attempts to hide the village's true financial condition. That report was completed by former Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot at the request of Dalton Village trustees. Hinyard is facing village trustee Jason Howes in today's primary. Coming up, we dig into Mayor Johnson's borrowing plan that's getting some pushback at City Hall. The city's chief financial officer joins us next.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
There is fierce debate in City Council over Mayor Brandon Johnson's proposal to borrow $830 million for infrastructure improvements. Opponents say the plan lacks fiscal responsibility after receiving a credit downgrade, while supporters say it's the only way to complete already planned projects. Here's some of what was said at last week's council meeting.
It is downright ludicrous for us to borrow an additional $830 million with this proposed debt structure when our financial challenges are so evident. Investment is vital, but the proposed debt structure is fiscal insanity and not normal.
Where was this conversation when the Skyway was sold? Where was this conversation when the parking meters were sold? Where was this conversation? But now, when it's time for the South and West Side to see stuff in this bond issue, oh, let's pump the brakes.
And joining us is Chicago's chief financial officer, Jill Jaworski. Thank you for joining us. So the infrastructure needs, what are the infrastructure needs that this would be paying for?
So this general obligation bond issue is going to fund what we consider sort of typical infrastructure for the city. It's going to fund street repairs, sidewalks, bridges. There's $100 million that's going to go into lead service line replacement, which is a really important responsibility that the city has to take on. It also is going to do some work on certain buildings, and it's going to provide funding for some of our fleet as well.
Now, we know the city just completed a very challenging budget process where you all had to close a $982.4 million deficit. Is this the time to increase, then, the city's debt?
So the city issues debt every single year to fund these infrastructure investments. And one of the reasons that we fund them with bonds, as opposed to just using what somebody might call pay-as-you-go money, meaning any additional money that we're taxing for and providing directly into infrastructure, is that these type of investments, they have a value that is carries over for many, many years. And so when you borrow money over an extended time period, a 30-year time period or so, and you're investing in projects that themselves last for decades, you're carrying that cost over multiple generations, in essence, as opposed to paying for it all today. So if we took and said, well, we're going to do $800 million in infrastructure investments today, and we didn't borrow for it, the current taxpayers would have a very heavy burden, even though future taxpayers would be enjoying the benefit of it. So this is standard practice, and the city every year is borrowing money and investing in infrastructure, as is the state and really every other government agency around us. This is standard procedure.
So you're saying spreading out the cost, of course, over years, over the life of whatever the projects that would be funded under that bond.
Yes, exactly. Similar to making if you make a major investment by buying a home. Most people finance that over 30 years.
One of the concerns that we're hearing is the repayment schedule. The city won't be making payments on the principal, though, for the first 20 years. Critics are calling this, quote, backloaded and projecting that it's going to add an additional $2 billion in additional costs, which you say, though, that's inaccurate.
Yes. I mean, the statement alone that it's going to add an extra $2 billion is not accurate. The entire structure itself, there's $830 million principal. The illustrative structure that we show to aldermen, which was a backloaded structure, had about $1.2 billion in interest. So we can't be creating an additional $2 billion in costs when, in fact, the interest is only $1.2 billion. So that's an exaggeration that has gotten a lot of play. The city of Chicago has a lot of front-loaded debt. So we have a very large amount that we're paying down right now. And so when we think about how are we going to schedule the repayments of this bonds, if we add them all up front, which of course will reduce our interest costs, same as if when you borrow for a home, if you do a 15-year mortgage versus a 30-year, you would pay much less interest. And that's a very financially prudent thing to do if you can afford to make that mortgage payment for the 15-year schedule. Because we already have a lot of debt in place, if we were to amortize it short right now to save interest, we would drive up our costs so much that we would really be adding a tremendous amount of pressure on our budget. And I think everyone saw the challenges that occurred last year. There was some significant debate over the mayor's proposed budget, and some of the revenues that were proposed were taken away and replaced with some one-time uses and a smaller amount of revenues. So we had a struggle getting to close that budget gap with sustainable revenues. Adding in a lot of debt service in the near term is only going to put more pressure on the revenue needs of the city going forward.
A few older people have proposed ways to restructure the plan. Do you see any other way to do that or to pay it sooner?
You know, certainly one of the things that we do with every single time we issue debt is we try to optimize the debt structure to lower the costs. So when we showed the illustrative scenarios to the aldermen, it was showing, look, we have a lot of debt here up front. And a lot of this debt is going to get repaid after this debt. But every time we go to market, we're looking at what are the current interest rates, what does our debt structure look like today, and what are ways we can save money. So our current debt structure, it has a lot of debt service, but there's ups and downs. It's not the same every year. It's unlike having a mortgage because the city has 25 mortgages in essence. We have 25 series of outstanding debt. We have about $5 billion in general obligation bonds outstanding. So some years the debt service is more than others. And so we might repay more in those years where we have a dip so that we end up more level overall. So each time we go to the markets, we're going to look at what the markets are like today. Are interest rates high? Are they low? Is the yield curve steep? And make a decision how we're going to amortize that to save money.
And to that point, when you go to the market, you take your own credit rating with you, the city's credit rating, of course.
Right.
And critics are also pointing to that downgrade, which is two notches above junk, according to S&P. Mm-hmm. But you've said you don't agree with that downgrade.
Well, we were really disappointed in the downgrade because it really didn't speak to the credit fundamentals of the city. Now, the city has some major financial challenges. We acknowledge those. The mayor talks about those all the time. There's a lot of legacy debt that the city carries, primarily our pension debt. We have about $40 billion in pension liabilities. And that's a result of the city for years and years and years making payments into the system that were just insufficient. And so our funded ratios got worse and worse. Those are legacy debts that we carry and we acknowledge, and they weigh down our credit rating. We have more pension debt, pension liability than any other city in this country, and in fact, more than most states. So that is why primarily why we have a low credit rating. The reason that the two agencies downgraded us after the budget was because of concerns about the budget process. So the mayor proposed a budget with a property tax increase. And the property tax, I know it is something that many people get concerned about, and they really worry about the impact on their budget, but it is also a very stable source of revenues. And for most people in the city, it would have been a very, very modest increase in their annual costs. Because of the long process it took with City Council to get to a resolution on what other revenues are we gonna do, and ultimately not getting to a resolution where we replaced all those revenues, and so we had to do some one-time maneuvers, that led to a process where the rating agencies had some real concerns about the budgeting, the budgeting ability and the political challenges that we're facing getting these through City Council. And that was really what led to the downgrade.
Some critics have expressed concern that the money would end up paying for projects that are not infrastructure specific. How do you alleviate that concern?
Yes, we've had a lot of, we've heard that mentioned a lot. And, you know, the plan that we put forward, that we introduced to City Council, that we share with aldermen and we've shared with the public, is to fund $830 million of infrastructure, all capital investments. That includes the things I talked about, but also what we call menu money, which is $75 million in total. It's $1.5 million that goes to each alderman for them to address specific projects in their ward that they and their community know are important. Because all of that is capital, we have put together a substitute ordinance that will go before council, and it specifically says for capital only to make sure that even though we've presented our plans, we understand some people still don't have trust, and so we've made it clear in the substitute ordinance that it cannot be used for anything other than capital.
Many municipalities and states are also concerned about the stability of federal funding in this administration. Has that influenced this decision, and how are you all taking that into account going forward?
Certainly, we are very focused on what's going on at the federal level. Our Office of Budget Management, as well as my office, is looking at and analyzing the situation every single day. Much of the federal money that we get does come for infrastructure. And when you delay funding infrastructure, it only becomes more expensive in the future. No different than if you get a leak in your roof. If you fix it right away, it's not going to be that expensive. If you let it go because you don't want to put the money into your roof, you're going to end up with water damage inside your house, and that will be much more expensive to fix. That is exactly what our infrastructure is like. We have to keep up with the need. It only gets more expensive if we defer it. So if we get less capital dollars from the federal government, it doesn't change the need for us to invest. So we need to keep current with our investments right now, because we may be more challenged fiscally going forward, and we may be having to limit our dollars and how they're used. So now is not the time for us to step back on what they're spending. It's the time for us to stay steady and keep spending on our infrastructure.
Are you worried, or how are you addressing taxpayers' trust after these debates and all of this?
I mean, certainly that's a big concern to us. One of the things that's, I think, been really important in this administration is that the mayor has done what he has said he was going to do. So, you know, we hear a lot of folks who doubt, you know, what we say as an administration, what the mayor says. We've heard people have said, you know, you're not going to use this money for capital. You know, you're going to use this for CPS. You're going to use it for their pension payment. But when we really look at the history of what the city has done, the mayor has said he's going to invest in housing. He said he's going to invest in mental health, youth employment, public safety. Those are the things that we have done in this administration and we will continue doing. So we hope that we build back that public trust by people looking and seeing what has the record really been.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Jill Jaworski, Chief Financial Officer of City of Chicago, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And we're back with more Chicago Tonight right after this. how the city plans to spend the last of its dwindling federal COVID relief funds, fresh efforts to rid the Chicago Police Department of extremist officers, and how the elimination of a state grocery tax could impact municipalities across the state, including Chicago. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, of course, Amanda Vinicky and Heather Sharone. Welcome back, team. So Mayor Johnson was asked today about the city's proposed $830 million borrowing plan and a lack of trust between the mayor's office and the city council. Here's a little of what he had to say, referencing a question at a recent WTTW forum.
There was a constituent who came to the WTTW open forum, and she said, "Mayor, either fix these streets or fix my car." Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to fix the streets.
Some of us were there for that. It was a funny moment from that resident. Heather, City Council is set to vote on the plan, as we've been discussing, tomorrow to borrow $830 million to repair everything from streets, roads, bridges. Why is this so controversial?
Well, it's really become the center of a social media furor, with people worried that this money would be used for purposes other than what the mayor says it will be, to repair roads and streets and bridges. And also, the 2027 mayor's race is already sort of starting, with people looking to sort of carve out a fiscally responsible lane for them, perhaps to run in 2 years. And also, as you said, there's a really deep lack of trust between the city council, which just endured a bruising budget negotiation, and the mayor's office, and nobody's quite sure where exactly that leaves everybody. And nobody likes piling more debt on top of more debt. A city already owes nearly $30 billion in general obligation debts, and that's on top of the pension debt. And of course, everybody's worried about finances. The federal government is pretty much in chaos. The state government is grappling with big deficits. And Johnson says, look, the city's got to take care of itself, and borrowing is the only way, he says, that that's possible.
Well, and interestingly, he was also asked in general, you know, what about the city budget? What are you going to do, for example, if federal budget cuts occur and that hurts the city, as everyone is sort of expecting will be the case? And the mayor, as he consistently has done, albeit this in a bit of a different direction than he's focused on previously, in terms of expecting the state to send more money to schools, something that, again, is part of the governor's budget plan, but not anywhere near the amount that CPS has talked about. He said, all right, look at the local government distributive fund. That's a tax, really, that the state sends to municipalities statewide. The mayor keeps on talking about, we want more. It used to be 10%. Now it's in the range between 6 and 7 that municipalities that has received. Nobody is talking about that. Just today, the Illinois Municipal League presented their 2025 agenda, raising the amount that municipalities get in this LGDF funding from the state. Not one of their asks. The mayor is the only one that's really talking about it. I don't think that that portends well for it happening.
And Amanda, sticking with this issue of revenue for the city of Chicago and, of course, municipalities across the state, Governor Pritzker has been talking up his administration's decision to eliminate the state grocery tax, that takes effect at the start of next year. Sounds like it might be good for those of us who buy groceries, but what impact will it actually have on revenue for Chicago and other cities in Illinois?
The governor has talked about it a lot. This is part of his budget last year, and ever since it was really introduced, he's been building it up and saying that while, for example, President Trump is doing these tariffs and is going to increase the costs that you have at food, in restaurants and groceries, Illinois helped cut the state's grocery tax. It is only 1%, so it's going to save you only a buck on $100. And as part of that package, because that's money that all went to municipalities, Chicago stands to lose between $60 to $80 million starting in January. Thus far, the city has not voted to bring that back. And that is something that when the state eliminated the grocery tax all over, they gave municipalities the option. You can go ahead and sort of reinstitute it yourself locally. So in many places, we're actually not expecting to be able to save that $1 on $100 of food purchases, because many municipalities are probably going to do that themselves. Thus far, according to the Municipal League, only about 60 have. But they say they're expecting more to do it as the time approaches. They've got to get it done by October. But really, today we're having a primary race, right, for municipalities. Then in April comes the general election. For perhaps they don't want to vote in a tax increase right before an election. Also, the justification for municipalities is that they want to see who wins and leave it to the new folks to make a decision on bringing that tax back.
All right, a lot to keep an eye on there. Okay, so Heather, you've also been doing some reporting on the city's remaining federal COVID relief funds, because we're sticking with money tonight. So just over $140 million left from the $1.9 billion. How is the city going to spend that?
Well, about $450 million of that total amount went to programs designed to repair the city's tattered social safety net. But the city had a lot more in the bank before, as I said, this really rough budget season. And the city council voted to reduce spending on these programs by $87 million to help balance that budget and avoid a property tax hike. So sure, $142 million sounds like a lot to spend over the next 2 years when it expires, but the city would have had significantly more had it figured out how to balance its budget without canceling programs like a renewed guaranteed basic income program and more money for violence prevention, which we spent a lot of time talking about in the last couple of weeks.
Obviously. Also, Governor Pritzker, Amanda, he was on CNN today. What'd he say?
So this is something we heard from him to a lot of attention. It got national attention. He was on Rachel Maddow after using the end of his State of the State in a budget address to really talk about the state of the nation. And then he made comparisons to what is happening in the United States right now under President Trump to the lead up really to World War II and what happened in Germany under Hitler. And he talked about that same situation again today on CNN. So really, I don't think that I heard anything new, but he is bringing this message of dangers of the constitutional republic to a national audience. And of course, that could be perhaps a sign that he has national ambitions. We've long known that he harbored those. He was, of course, in the running to be a vice presidential running mate. But he also says that this is a true fear and a warning that he wants individuals to take seriously. And there's a lot of frustration that other Democrats are not sounding the alarm with such fury. And so the governor doing a lot of it on his own.
Heather, you've done extensive reporting also on police misconduct, the issue of alleged extremists within the Chicago Police Department. City is just now forming a task on this issue. Fill us in. We've got about 45 seconds.
Well, 8 months ago, Inspector General Deborah Whispard revealed that she had recommended the mayor's office form a task force to look at sort of a whole-of-government approach. How do we root out extremists who might be on the city's payroll? And at that time, the mayor's office declined, but reversed course just last week, but didn't issue a press release, didn't hold a press event, really didn't throw the full force of the bully pulpit behind that effort. This is a tough issue involving a lot of different sort of rules and people's First Amendment rights of association. It's not clear whether this task force is going to sort of solve this really problem that has been bedeviling the city for a while, but at least there's going to be some meetings, I guess.
Meetings, hopefully. You'll let us know if
there are. I sure will.
No. One thing we did not get to, former Governor Jim Edgar. Announcing that he is battling pancreatic cancer. Of course, we wish him the best in his fight against that. That is Spotlight Politics. My thank you to Heather Sharone and Amanda Vinicky. Up next, remembering legendary soul singer and longtime Cook County Commissioner Jerry Iceman Butler. Soul singer Jerry Iceman Butler died late last week. Butler was known for hits like For Your Precious Love, Only the Strong Survive, and Make It Easy on Yourself. He recorded more than 50 albums, was a three-time Grammy nominee, and a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Butler was also a face in local politics, serving more than 30 years as a Cook County Board Commissioner. Here he is on the Friday Night Show with Bob Surratt in 2003.
What was the music scene like back in Chicago in the late 50s when you were getting started?
You know, it was running rampant, and yet City Hall and most of the places downtown north of Madison didn't even know it existed.
Two worlds.
Two different worlds. There was a place called Record Row where most of the record companies were located. There was Chess, there was BJ, there was wonderful record distributors all up and down the block. And to be fair, down on Wacker Drive was a company called Mercury Records. And over at McClure Court, CBS had little OK Records over there. Mm-hmm. And then down on Madison Street, RCA Victor Wacker Drive going south on Wacker Drive.
Must have been an exciting time.
Absolutely wonderful time. The music was, and the unique thing about Chicago is that it has always had a great variety of music. For instance, VJ and Chess were known as rhythm and blues labels, but they really did rhythm and blues, jazz, and gospel. And I was saying earlier, the only place I know where you've gotten a Grammy in blues, jazz, gospel, classical music, and polka.
Chicago.
That's Chicago.
Jerry Butler died last week at the age of 85. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.